Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. On June 11th, next Tuesday, City of Tulsa voters could very well select their next mayor when they go to the polls. Today on Studio Tulsa, we conclude our series of conversations with the major candidates vying to be Tulsa's next mayor. Earlier this week, we spoke with contenders Kathy Taylor and Bill Christensen. Today, we speak with the incumbent. Dewey Bartlett is the 39th mayor of the City of Tulsa, who was first elected in November of 2009 and is seeking his second term. Bartlett was also a city councilor from District 9 from 1990 to 1994 in the first years of the council-run system of the City of Tulsa, and is president of his family's oil and gas business. He joins us today to talk about his priorities if reelected for a second term. Mayor Dewey Bartlett is our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Mayor Bartlett, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, Rich, thank you. Good to be here.
When you took office in, what was it, 2009?
2009, December of 2009.
Yeah, the economy was in pretty bad shape, so I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but the biggest accomplishment of your first term.
Well, it was that problem was our economy and the way that our city government was in a very, very bad place. When I took over as mayor, we were spending money at a rate that by April of 2010, we'd have been out of cash. And we would have been in a position of probably having to file for bankruptcy or some sort of reorganization. It would have been a bad thing. So we had to do two things that I decided to do. First of all, we had to react very quickly to stop the bleeding, lessen by a very large degree the amount of cash that we were spending, and finally begin to live within our own means. Second thing I wanted to do was to fix the problem as best as I could, best as we could, and get us to a point to where we would not have to revisit that type of activity that we had to do if the economy were to slow down in the future. We didn't want to repeat this again. So we were able to, over a several week and then several month period of time, accomplish both tasks by working with our various unions successfully. We had to lessen the salaries and benefit packages that our employees had. Most of the unions went along with us. We did commit that whatever we did do, it would be done fairly. Everybody would be treated the same. Generally, we accomplished that. Unfortunately, one of the unions, the police union, for whatever reason, didn't want to go along with us, and we had to lay off 125, roughly, police officers. That obviously was a very, very bad day. Now, fortunately, we were able to hire them back, as we did everybody. We restored everybody to their previous pay positions, and all the police officers were hired back, with the exception of one who left town. And we're in much, much better shape now. We now have a rainy day fund. When I took over, it had no money in it. Now we have $2 million in it. So we are able to absorb some sort of a financial hit if it happens in the future. We have a much more efficiently run city government. We have set priorities. We privatized in some areas that made sense. We've given our employees a lot more opportunity to approach our management and their employment much more aggressively, in that they, if they can identify ways to seriously save identifiable sources of money or expenses and money payments, then they can participate in a program and put some of that those savings in their back pocket.
Do you feel like the services of the city are at the same level today as 4 years ago?
As far as I'm concerned, yes. And actually, they've improved in many areas. What we wanted to do was to employ a motto that the customer comes first. I mean, it really is a very smart way to approach city business. Private business does it the same way, and city business should do the same. And we've done that. We know that the development community, the real estate development community, had used Tulsa as an excuse to do business elsewhere. That's changed. We're implementing several changes in our departments. We're improving our software capability. We've made some changes in personnel to make certain that the customer does come first. But at the same time, that we're also becoming a lot more efficient and a lot more smart in how we approach our government and how we spend our money, and making certain that customers are satisfied and that we give them information, that we're transparent. We have now a record of being extremely transparent. We've received an award 3 years in a row of an A or an A-plus for our transparency of our financial information, for example. So it's that type of activity. We've made a lot of improvements. We now have a much better idea of where our money comes from, which was not known before, which is interesting to me. I'm in the business world, and there's been several candidates in the past that always say, we want to run this city like a business. Well, the first thing walking in the door, a business person wants to know is, where's the money coming from? And who's collecting it? And are they doing a good job? And how much is it costing us to get that money? Well, those questions hadn't been asked before, which was interesting. So anyway, we asked the questions, found out, made some changes, and we're collecting our money now.
You're talking about the remittances from sales tax from the state?
Exactly, exactly. People that buy things in retail stores where sales taxes are paid, they pay their taxes, and they weren't being picked up efficiently. And the city of Tulsa has to pay a fee, or at that time was paying a very large fee, to the state of Oklahoma to pick up those taxes and give them back to us. And they weren't doing a good job of it, and they weren't auditing, and they weren't paying attention. And people were not were paying taxes, but they weren't being remitted to the city of Tulsa. So that's changed.
Well, let's talk about the biggest priorities for the next term. The biggest challenge for the next mayor, what do you consider your priorities if you were to win re-election? You know, what are the things you want to accomplish in this next term?
Well, certainly public safety, getting us back to a level where we at least meet or exceed the minimum manning levels in the police department and the fire department. Economic development, job creation, that is a top priority. We've done extremely well in that regard, certainly. Making sure that our infrastructure is maintained properly, and we do have adequate funds set aside for maintenance of our street system as well as all the other infrastructure needs that we have. And then finally, good quality of life issues, making certain that our neighborhoods are kept in good place. We've done a considerable amount of improvement in the monies that we spend to get rid of old, abandoned, dilapidated houses and structures in our neighborhoods. It happens throughout our city, not just one area of town, but making certain that those structures are either rehabilitated or they're removed. And then once they're removed, the blight is removed from that block, and that land can then be sold to a private individual who will build a new home, and the neighborhood begins to take back their neighborhood. And we've had very, very good luck doing that.
Can you just give us an example of a neighborhood that you're proud of that you've helped change for the better?
Well, there's a few in North Tulsa, a few in the Brookside area, for example, and even in South Tulsa. But what we've seen in the past is that a neighborhood, there'll be one house that is suddenly goes into disrepair, and it's allowed to accumulate trash and debris, and windows are broken, and the person that owns it then rents it out to somebody, and they don't pay the rent, and they allow people to come in, and bad things happen. Well, eventually, no one wants to inhabit the house because it's in bad shape. So then the criminal element enters into it, and sometimes the house will even be burned down in order to get the metal out of it and sell the metal. But once that happens, who wants to live next to a place like that? So then those houses begin to be rented, and then they go into a bad place. So it's a steady movement towards a blighted area on a block-by-block basis, and it can really just devastate an entire neighborhood. So we have to take it over by reversing that when a home is allowed to look bad and they don't let trash and debris, and they don't cut the weeds and the grass, and they don't fix the fence, and too many automobiles are in the front yard, and they're changing the oil, and just all the different stuff that can happen that allows a neighborhood to sort of go to seed. Our neighborhood inspection team is very aggressive, and when they're requested, they come into a neighborhood, and they do a very good job of telling people, you can't do that anymore. You have to remove it. You have to make these changes. And it's that type of aggressive behavior that we have and we consistently provide. Sometimes it's a little slow because we don't have enough people, but we do move them around and whatever we can do to make certain that our neighborhood inspection teams are adequately maintained and funded. We've changed things around a bit to where we now have a team that does work on weekends. Many times some of these activities that happen around a home that do bad things in neighborhoods, they only occur on the weekends when people are home if they're not working. And there's no one around to watch them. So anyway, we change that a little bit, get some people out there on the weekends and take care of the problem.
Well, let's talk about the priorities. You mentioned public safety. How far are we away from the optimal level of staffing for the police and the fire? And do you envision getting to that level if we're not there now in the next term?
Yes, we can get there in the next term. The fire is closer than the police, but in both regards, within 3 to 5 years, we could meet and exceed the minimum manning needs of both departments. But the real key component of this is a funding source. And I'm the only candidate that has articulated a very good, verifiable, understandable means of funding such a change that would add 70 new police officers, 45 new firefighters, and still have money left aside to dedicate towards 3 dedicated street crews that would help maintain our street system.
And this is your four-to-fix?
Four-to-fix money. It's 0.167% of 1 cent.
Which is finishing up from the county, correct?
Yes. It's expiring next year, and it would require 2 things. First of all, a vote of the city council to allow for a vote of the public, and then the public would have an opportunity to vote on it to allow for that reallocation of money, knowing that it would be done in such a way that the money would go directly by ordinance into a series of funds that would be administered by the city administration, that it could not change without a vote of the council and public hearings. But it would not go in the general fund. So it would go directly by ordinance into a series of funds. They would be overseen by a sales tax overview committee, private citizens that do us a great service right now in other funds of this nature. But that would provide sufficient monies for those police and firefighters to get us to that point of minimum manning levels, and it would do it in such a way that it would not have a negative impact upon other services in City Hall. Traditionally, what we've done at City Hall is if we have a need and if there's not enough money, then the council and or mayor in conjunction with or separately, then money would be taken from a particular department and then used for another purpose. Well, that's great for the other purpose, but the department it comes from is suddenly left high and dry, and they're not able to provide a service. Parks Department has unfortunately been...
That's been the place, that's the siphon.
That is, and they have gotten to a place where it's just, I mean, it's killing them. And it really has hurt our city because no one was willing to make the tough decisions and make the tough choices of what to do. They just said, well, let's just go to the Parks Department. They don't need that much money. Well, they do need that much money. We have to have a good, verifiable, usable park system in our city. It's a quality of life issue that's very, very important, not just for us as residents, but for us as people that are interested in economic development, job creation, having employers that are here. If they want to attract more employees, either to Tulsa or from the Tulsa area, something like a good park system, it helps the families tremendously.
Well, you were talking about these 3 areas. We understand more police officers, more firemen. Talk about these 3 city crews that you're talking about. They're kind of going to be like rapid response teams, it sounds like, from what I've understood.
Well, they would be, given the responsibility, would be their job of maintaining our streets. They'd fill the cracks. They'd fix the potholes permanently. They would show up and where a city street might have some repairs and it might need a thin overlay of asphalt or whatever. They would provide that. And they'd be city crews. They can provide a service cheaper for us. But the most important thing is they would have consistent capability of maintaining our street system. We've seen for the last several years all the orange cones all over the city. Well, that is progress because we are now at least finally addressing our problem with our streets because they had deteriorated to a place where they were needing to be rebuilt and replaced, which is a very, very expensive proposition. The reason they got to that way into that repair was that we were not maintaining the streets. We didn't have sufficient crews to maintain our street system and have been that way for years. So if we now are spending several $100 million to rebuild and replace our street system, but if we don't maintain it, then we're going to be doing the same thing all over again, spending a huge amount of money prematurely. By repurposing this four-to-fix money, the 0.167, and allowing us to get more cops and more firefighters, and as importantly, the street crews dedicated towards maintenance, then we can defer those huge expenses of rebuilding and replacing by, in my view, several decades, and therefore freeing up those monies that might have been spent for that activity for other good purposes.
My guest today is Mayor Drury Bartlett. He's seeking re-election as Tulsa's 39th mayor. He'll be seeking his second term on June 11th, when is the primary date, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa as we continue our series of conversations with the mayoral candidates. Let's talk about capital improvements. You had Vision 2. It went to defeat. What is your feeling about the next set of capital improvements? Are you thinking about going back to the board at some point? What do you see as the critical capital improvements we need to be making for the city?
Well, we've gone through a process for the last year and a half to identify and prioritize capital improvement needs. And in my view, what we should put to the vote of the public is mostly streets-oriented. We identified several years ago almost $1 billion worth of needs for our street system, both for rebuilding, repairing, and widening. We decided to approach the rebuilding and repairing reconstruction part of initially because that was the most desperate need. We've spent about $451 million to date. In my view, the next tranche of projects should be continue to be streets-oriented, but they can be in such a way where we continue the rehabilitating and rebuilding, but also consider several widening projects because we do have some parts of our city where the streets are simply not adequate enough to handle the traffic load now, and they're beginning to fall apart. So we need to get out in front of that and widen and replace and do a good job of meeting the needs of those particular neighborhoods because it really is a public safety issue as well. If we have a street system that's inadequate, if we have a street system that's fallen apart, it's a public safety problem where people will get hurt, accidents are more frequent, and bad things can happen, and we simply can't allow that to happen. So our next capital improvements group of projects should be, in my view, and we're in the process still with the city council of making decisions on how this goes, but I believe that we will have a consensus that it's mostly, if not almost entirely, street-related in some manner, shape, or form.
Now, Vision 2, the first part of that package was our properties at the airport, city properties. Mm-hmm. Of course, this was a county tax, and that sort of, that you know, they're city properties. Where does that rank in your priorities now?
Well, it's a very high priority, but it'll have to be addressed separately. I believe right now streets is the streets.
That's what
is
you're
the
hearing.
Deal. Streets is it. I think that's what the public expectation is. That's where the need is. The situation at the airport is still there, but I believe that we can address that at some point down the road after a year or two. Obviously, because of the result of Vision 2, we need to have a better result as far as education of the public of the need and understanding of the need. And we need to educate ourselves as well as knowing what the public's appetite is for different things.
Where is river development on your list of priorities today?
It's in that same category. I mean, it's a very top priority. We need water in the river. I mean, we understand that. I do know that in these regards that we are talking now, we have to approach them on a city-wide basis, not a county-wide. I think that those have been tried already a couple of times, and in both cases they failed. And so I think we need to take a look at it from the point of view of whatever we do decide to do. It's going to be a city deal. It'll have to be a public-private partnership arrangement of some type. I know that that's worked in the past, and it'll certainly work in the future. But it's finding that one particular niche and that one group and getting everybody on the same card, so to speak. And I really believe that we will find water in the river, finally. We have others during the Vision 2 process that did make some commitments, some very generous commitments to help in that regard. So I know that they're still available. So we'll have some time. We won't have pending loss of employers. That was a possibility, kind of driving that Vision 2 deal. That's not necessarily a problem, at least today. So getting water in the river is a very, very important thing.
Let's talk about another. Public Transit did a strategic plan. It calls for expansion of public transportation, especially bus rapid transit. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at our transit budget, this is another place where we've gone to funds in the past. What is your feeling about the importance of developing mass transit here in the city?
Well, it's very important, but it has to be done in such a way that we really look at the entirety of the need and of the potential problem in the future. At some point, I'm convinced that we will have to talk about the commuter train system in the Tulsa region. It might be a couple of decades away, but at some point we probably will. And a part of that discussion needs to certainly take into consideration transit, because the bus system is a supplementary portion of a rail system. Once somebody takes a train into Tulsa and goes to a train station and get off the train, how do I get to where they want to go? To work or to go shop or to the hospital or downtown, wherever they want to go? Well, it's a bus system. Everybody can't take cabs, they're too expensive. So a bus system has to be in place. So that's part of the process of planning where that is going to happen and how it's going to happen. But we also have to plan ahead about if we do want to have commuter train at some point in time, or if we do want to have an additional bus station at some point in time, where do they go? Well, we pick some locations, but we've also done things like bridge across the Arkansas River, Interstate 244. Well, we made room in the bridges at the bridge that has been built and the ones being built now. There's room there for two train tracks to get across the river. So at that point in time, when commuter traffic and train use is more of a way of our life, the bridge will be there and able to accommodate, and we won't have to build a new bridge. So it's that type of planning that we're very, very supportive of and we're very happy to participate in. We do have a new planning director that's been there about a year now, and she's done a great job, and she's helped us out in a lot of these type of activities, planning for transportation. But that also includes our airport system and being able to tie all these together. We have the opportunity and we have the desire, and now we have the planning. So we can react accordingly, and over this whatever period of time is necessary, we will be able to tie all major forms of transportation together, mainly by a rail system, I believe. But we also have to remember that it does include the Port of Catoosa, because that's a real serious employer both now as well as in the future. And if we have an opportunity to tie all those major areas of economic development and employment, tie them all together by a variety of transportation opportunities, then we've really set our sail economically for the future of our city.
My guest today is Mayor Dewey Bartlett, seeking re-election as Tulsa mayor on June 11th. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. As mayor, you've had the great pleasure of watching a lot of work sort of come to fruition in the Brady District and the area on the north side of downtown, south of the tracks, where it's really a vibrant downtown today. How do you extend that to the rest of downtown, further south, where, you know, as you probably know, we won the parking lot crater award for all those parking lots around 11th Street. Mm-hmm. How do you start building density in downtown and moving out that vibrancy beyond where it is today?
Well, there's a variety of ways. Certainly the involvement with the landowners, the property owners, the developing community, the real estate community, having that relationship is very important. But also doing things like having area-wide tax incremental financing capability, which we have done and are in the process of doing as well. The downtown area has a variety of TIFs, and what we're proposing now is that we have a one TIF that covers the entirety of our downtown area, and that in itself will give us a lot more options and opportunities and not just relying upon the expensive side of putting together, from a legal standpoint, a TIF. If we have one that covers the entire area, I think that'll give us a lot more opportunity to help with financing and help with being able to react more quickly to a good idea or a good opportunity, where the developing community approaches the city government with a very good idea, and then we can say, well, let's get involved, let's use our existing TIF, and then that'll help help with the process of helping front load the financing of something.
Are you in favor of continuing the surface parking moratorium downtown?
Well, yes and no, I guess. That's a terrible answer, isn't it? Yes and no. I understand the reason for it being there, but I'm not a real fan of moratoriums, because it does have a tendency to stifle creativity and stifle development. The use of that land in most cases, it's already a parking lot of some type anyway. So I don't want to stand in the way of using it for something better. Most of the buildings that we've seen that have been created into parking lots have been torn down for a good reason. They simply were falling down. So I'm not too worried about the 320 South Boston building being torn down for a parking lot, for example.
That's true, but you have to admit there have been a lot of properties, say, in the Blue Dome District that were on the verge of falling down, and people have come in and redeveloped them and are redeveloping them now.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. So that's, I guess, why I probably said yes and no. there are always exceptions, and as long as the moratorium, if it were to stay in place, as long as there is some flexibility in it that people can get an exception to it or something like that, then I'm okay with it.
Okay, well, we're about out of time, Mayor. Voters will be going to the poll to determine your future and decide whether they should give you another term as Tulsa mayor. Why should they do that?
Well, when I became mayor about 4 years ago, when I was sworn in office, I was the fourth different mayor within 10 years. By my reelection, it'll finally provide us some continuity of leadership, continuity of vision, which we haven't had for a long time. And I think that's one of the reasons that our city has, until recently, really hasn't had a good participation in the economic boom that our country has experienced over the last several decades. If we look at cities like Oklahoma City, or Austin, Texas, or San Antonio, or Louisville, Kentucky, or Indianapolis, Portland, Oregon, variety of cities that have been very, very successful. They've really done very, very well. And the main reason is, in my view, is that they've had continuous continuity of leadership, both in their elected office, as well as in their business community. The same people, day in and day out, enact the same vision, enact the same capabilities, have the same relationships, have the same opportunity of economic development, job creation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Every time we have a new mayor, new leadership, then that whole relationship that might have been built by the previous mayor is gone. The relationship and understanding of economic development, the relationships in Washington, D.C., for example, are not there anymore. Relationships with the elected officials, relationships with our own county government, or the various cities around our county, they're not there. As now, we have a terrific relationship with all those different groups I just mentioned, a very good, friendly friendship between all the different players, and that's been a real godsend to us, and we've done very, very well because of that. So to throw that away is, to me, not a good thing to do, and the decision should be to vote for Dewey Bartlett June 11th, because we have exhibited success. I have a very, very good verifiable track record of being the city's mayor for the last 4 years. It's very easy to see our success and what we've accomplished. And that's what we're going to continue on. More of the same, more success, more job creation, more emphasis on public safety and neighborhood development, more efficiencies, and just running things properly. That's what we're going to accomplish.
All right, Mayor, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tulsa Mayor Dewey Bartlett speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Next Tuesday, June 11th, City of Tulsa voters will vote for their next mayor. If you missed a part of today's conversation or some of our conversation with fellow major contenders, Kathy Taylor and Bill Christensen, they're all available on our website at publicradiotulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.